Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Scott Davis, author of The Shift, The Transformation of Today's Marketers into Tomorrow's Growth Leaders, part one of two. Hi, I'm Nathan Ives, and I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Scott Davis, author of The Shift, The Transformation of Today's Marketers into Tomorrow's Growth Leaders, Part 1 of 2. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Scott Davis shares with us his insights on how marketers can make the shift from being tactical marketing experts to corporate growth leaders who help propel their organizations to greater bottom line success. And so now, without any further delay, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Scott Davis, author of The Shift, The Transformation of Today's Marketers into Tomorrow's Growth Leaders, and a senior partner at Profit, a global marketing consultancy. Scott was an adjunct professor at the Kellogg Graduate School of Management at Northwestern University and has guest lectured at many top MBA programs, including Harvard, New York University, Columbia, and the University of Chicago. He has worked with top executives at GE, Johnson & Johnson, IBM, Best Buy, Sara Lee, and Boeing. Scott is frequently quoted by leading business publications, including the Wall Street Journal, Reuters, USA Today, and Business Week. Scott, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Thank you, Nathan, for having me.
I have been so looking forward to having you on the show, having read your book and already applying it and the concepts that you talk about with my clients. You also had written two books that preceded The Shift, and I did want to mention those and ask you about them just to start out with. The first one was a book titled Brand Asset Management, and the second was Building the Brand-Driven Business. Scott, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about those two books and then also talk to us about what you saw as the real market need for The Shift.
Great. Thanks, Nathan. Mm-hmm. Well, Brand Asset Management was written probably about 15, 16 years out of Procter & Gamble and out of business school and about 10 years in consulting. And I had noticed a trend with a lot of companies I had either worked with in consulting or before consulting, that most executives in an organization continued to misunderstand what a brand truly was.
Okay.
And they looked at brands as tactics, as logos, as slogans, as ads. And they really never understood the point that brands really can drive the asset value for an organization.
Yes.
And so in the late 90s, I commissioned a study and wrote an article about this topic, which I call brand asset management. And the whole idea was, how do you start to treat your brand more like an asset, mm-hmm. like you would do other assets on your balance sheet, like you would do with your people, like you would do with your capital?
Sure.
And the U.S. is one of the few countries where brands are not put on the balance sheet. It's put on the balance sheet in most other parts of the world. So how do we start to actually treat the brand more like other countries do and actually treat it as the asset it really is and start to build value in the brand and try to truly extract value in the brand?
Okay. All right. Yeah, you know, I have to admit, I see that all the time. with the clients I work with. And it's exactly like you said. The brand to them is the logo. And they'll think, nothing, well, just go change the logo.
Yeah, and what's interesting, Nathan, is I put a T-shirt on the front cover of both of the books, Brand Asset Management and Building the Brand-Driven Business. Mm-hmm. And I had an interesting quote in there because the T-shirt had no label on it. And the idea behind the T-shirt is that it could be a $3 T-shirt, it could be a $30 T-shirt. It could be sold at Nordstrom's, it could be sold at Kmart. And it's all dependent upon what brand is stitched into the collar of that T-shirt. And that that became part of my brand. Mm-hmm. And then I followed that book up a few years later with one of my partners, Michael Dunn. We co-wrote a book called Building the Brand-Driven Business, and it was subtitled Operationalizing Your Brand to Drive Profitable Growth.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond being a mouthful to say, the idea behind that book was, okay, now you appreciate that brand as an asset. You're starting to understand how to manage it more effectively in your organization to really get as much value as possible, you know, with the segments that you're trying to go after and with obviously the revenues and margin you're trying to drive. How do you actually get the brand to live and come to life internally so customers can consistently experience it on the outside world? And this was really about how do we get every single employee engaged in driving the brand so ultimately it's delivered in a consistent way, whether it's, you know, around the city, around the state, around the country, around the world, it's felt the exact same way.
Okay. I guess when I think of companies that, I don't know, it just strikes me as they live the brand, I think of like Nike and Google.
Yeah, they're absolutely great examples. Starbucks for a long time was one of the best examples. Harley's a great example.
Yes.
And these are, you know, I talk about employees going through three general stages as they start to embrace the brand as kind of really the business, and brand and business strategy is the same. First, they kind of get it into their hands and start to understand it a little bit and are able to, you know, it's almost like they get a presentation. They get something that is more tangible. Then they start to get it into their heads. Okay, well, now I'm starting to understand how I could behave differently to actually exhibit more on-brand behaviors. And then finally, it goes into their hearts, and they don't know any other way to operate but in on-brand ways and truly delivering on the brand. And a newer company that I talk a lot about is Zappos.com, which is one that just has nailed it, where every employee bleeds that brand. An older brand like Best Buy is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So from those two books then, your third book now is The Shift.
Yep.
And The Shift is different because it focuses on the chief marketing officer and moving that person from a tactical marketer to a corporate growth leader. What did you see in the marketplace that said, hey, there's a need for this to happen?
Yeah, it's a great question. And what I started to notice over the last 5 years in particular, one, you know, the world has dramatically changed, obviously. And it's in particular in the last year and a half from an economic perspective. The business landscape has changed dramatically in terms of who's in business, who's not in business, how companies are going to market. The marketing portfolio, the types of different marketing levers and tactics and programs and initiatives and strategies has exponentially grown. And the consumer has changed dramatically. We are in a world where the consumer is as smart or smarter than most employees within the company. They live in a world of transparency. They live in a world of they have as much information to bring to the table in negotiating a price as anybody has ever had.
Sure.
And marketing still, for the most part, in most organizations, is marginalized. And when I look at the Spencer Stewart study that comes out every year, in general, CMOs have a shelf life of about 2.5 years.
Wow.
Which means they are in and out of their company in less than 3 years, when their other C-suite colleagues, the CEO, the CFO, the COO, the head of sales, all have a tenure of at least 4 to 7 years on average. Okay. And this really bugged me, being a marketer by training and mm-hmm. kind of having marketing is part of the world that I live in. I wanted to understand more why. And that was kind of the emphasis behind the shift, is how do we stop having marketing being marginalized in strategic conversations with other executives? How do we stop having marketing being thought of as the owners of Marcom and Marcom budgets and Marcom tactics and agency relationships only and fighting for kind of keeping nickels that they no longer have? And how do we get marketing into the strategic conversation, because for the most part, they are not invited into that strategic dialogue?
Okay. Well, Scott, then, if the CMO now is going to be part of that strategic conversation, what role or what part of the conversation does that person fill?
Yeah, so I make a pretty strong argument that in the book that there are five shifts overall, and we could talk about those in a little bit, mm-hmm. that I think marketers have to make. But I think in general, what I'm starting to see is there's this group of marketers out there, and let's just call them visionary marketers.
Okay.
And when I think about visionary marketers, they have a few hallmarks or attributes that really describe what they are all about within their organizations. And just, you know, to give you some names and just some reference points, I mm-hmm. think of Beth Comstock at GE. I think of Becky Sager at Schwab. I think of Ann Loons at Adobe. I think of Barry Judge at Best Buy. I think of Michael Mendelsohn at HP. Russ Klein at Burger King. These are a different new breed of marketers, again called visionary marketers. And think of these folks as doing a few different things. They drive strategic board level discussions on growth, and they are in the growth discussions, dialogue, and are architects of the growth agenda or the strategic plan.
Okay.
They are able to balance short and long-term perspectives equally, knowing that they consistently have to deliver on the quarterly results, but also have to plant seeds for the future.
Mm-hmm.
They recognize, and this is the one that probably disorients marketers the most, they recognize that they no longer own the brand. They no longer control the brand. And in fact, the reality, Nathan, is they never did.
Okay.
Customers own the brand. Stakeholders mm-hmm. own the brand. Influencers own the brand. You know, the worlds that surround our brand are really influencing purchase decisions, and our job as marketers is how do we best manage the network that revolves around our brand. These visionary marketers, I would say they drive profitable strategic insights that lead to new opportunities and new innovations. These marketers, I can just give you three more criteria, they okay. co-own what I would call the customer acquisition strategy and budget. And mm-hmm. they think only in terms of growth strategy and growth budget. They don't think about their marketing strategy and the marketing budget only. These marketers are, again, this is a little disorienting, they operate in a directionally correct manner, meaning they don't have to have 90% predictability before they're willing to go to market with a new initiative, program, innovation, et cetera. They're willing to go to market with it being 60 to 70% right.
Okay.
And then test and learn along the way. And the last point of these visionary marketers is they truly lead through what I'd call a leveraged / collaborative model, where they are able to work, and this is really a tough job for a lot of marketers, both horizontally and vertically at the same time.
Okay.
Horizontally across business units, across geographies, across different functional areas in a true partnership manner. And then vertically driving marketing within their organization, and marketing obviously enabling growth.
Okay. And it seems like the CMO is so well positioned for that, as you talk about in the shift, because they're really the keepers of all of the customer data. They're the closest to it.
Yeah. That's one of my biggest arguments in the book, is that there's nobody that has the depth and richness of data around your customers than the marketers and the mm-hmm. head of marketing. And mm-hmm. what I continue to find in many, many companies I visit and clients I spend time with is mounds and mounds of research in different geographies, in different business units, for different brands, that nobody has drilled a hole through going down, and certainly no one has looked across all the research.
Sure.
So there's really an opportunity for marketers to step up and look for opportunities within BUs, across BUs, or within brands and across brands like nobody else can. And
okay.
And that's where I'm a big believer that the word insights is actually old school. You know, we used to go from give me some of the facts, give me some of the findings and learnings, to give me the insight, give me the big so what.
Yes.
And I'm all about insight doesn't matter if I can't get to impact. So it's from insight to impact.
Okay. All right. Well, and now while they're uniquely positioned to take that organization growth role, what obstacles do they face when they're trying to assume that kind of role within the organization?
Yeah, there's a lot of obstacles, and I think I would maybe take it from a little bit of a different perspective. But what are the enablers for success?
Okay.
And the mirror image will be what are the obstacles? So the four I talk about in the book, and then I may want to add an additional one. It's first of all, what is the CEO/board's disposition around marketing and marketing's role? Is the CEO/board very operationally and financially focused, and they think in a very linear kind of engineering, driving hard the P&L kind of way?
Sure.
Or do they lean a little bit more to customer insight and impact, innovation, and risk-taking and driving growth you know, through the segments that they target.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one that's going to say their CEO or board is not customer focused. It's just where do they lean?
Sure. Okay.
So that would be the first. Second is just what is the history of marketing within the category that they compete in and a bit, you know, within the organization. Is it kind of narrow and tactical in nature, or is it expansive and C-level oriented? And I would say that you know, B2B industrial companies, for instance, and a lot of categories from agricultural to again hardcore industrial, those categories and industries, marketing is really not developed, and so they put marketing in a bit of a silo, and that's
mm-hmm.
how they operate, and it may work well for that category, but those that actually can break out, like Pam Butcher at Dow has done, and kind of should help develop a marketing capability from scratch, or Ann Ness at Cargill. Even though marketing was not really known in their categories, they broke out and changed the dynamic.
Sure, sure.
I'd say the third enabler for success would be, what's it been like at the company in the past? Has it been very product, program, tactically focused?
Okay.
Or has it, again, has the company experienced a more strategic orientation? And I think this is the one that dictates whether or not a company has a 24-month CMO or senior VP of marketing, or a long-term CMO or senior VP of marketing. A lot of marketers feel like they, and this is what I call the marketing doom loop, a lot of
okay.
marketers feel like they have to come in and make change immediately, and the easiest place to make change is around the agency and the advertising and the logos and the tactics that I talked about with brand asset management.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to pick that as one of their first battles, and they help perpetuate what marketing is thought of as tactical and in nature, not very strategic.
Okay.
And then the last one I'll just give you, Nathan, is that
sure.
just the individual marketer's traits. You know, is the marketer coming in that they bring in strong, expansive, growth-oriented experience? They're P&L focused. They're smart yet humble in terms of what they do and they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or are they, again, very narrow and kind of marcom oriented? And I think that those are kind of some of the triggers for whether a marketer might have a long-term success in an organization or not.
And that concludes part one. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Scott Davis for being with us today and sharing his insights on making the shift from tactical marketer to corporate growth leader. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Scott Davis and The Shift via the several hyperlinks located on the Strategy Driven website. Till next time, so long.